师的声音。胡适之先生中英文演讲选粹，英文演讲部分。
这一段英文演讲的题目是《中国大陆反共抗暴运动》（Anti-Communist Revolts on Chinese Mainland）。这是民国46年9月26号胡适之先生在联合国大会的演说。胡适之先生原来是联合国宪章的起草人之一，但是由于联合国决定赋予安理会永久会员国享有否决权，胡先生因而拒绝在宪草上签字。12年之后，也就是民国46年，胡先生以中国代表的身份在联合国大会当中发表演说，指责共产政权之下的百姓没有不说话的自由。这个演说被誉为是历来联合国中最动人的演说之一。胡先生的演说原为英文，中文稿是中央社的译稿。我们现在就来听听。
Mr. President, I wish to join your numerous friends in expressing to you the hearty congratulations of my delegation on your election to the presidency of the 12th Assembly, an honor which you and your nation.So well deserved. My delegation pledges to you our full and wholehearted support. One of the very recent good tidings from Asia is the independence of the Federation of Malaya. My delegation to the Security Council and in the Assembly expressed its satisfaction in connection with the admission of Malaya to membership in the United Nations.The independence of Malaya is important in itself. It is also important as a part of the general movement which, since the end of the Second World War, has conferred freedom and independence upon many nations in Asia and Africa who are now sitting in our midst as our fellow members. Unfortunately, in this contemporary world, in contrast,this movement of national liberation, there has been the opposite movement of national enslavement. Many countries in Asia and in Europe have been deprived of their human freedoms and national rights. We in the United Nations can never forget the fate of these enslaved peoples. In the resumed session of the 11th Assembly, we discussedthe report of the Special Committee on the Problem of Hungary. My delegation is moderately satisfied with the resolution which the resumed session of the 11th Assembly passed by an overwhelming majority. I wish we could have done more. Today, Mr. President, I wish to pay a tribute to the freedom fighters of Hungary in the form of a reportOn what great repercussions the Hungarian uprising has produced on my people in the Chinese mainland. The Chinese people in the mainland seem to have learned a great deal about the Hungarian uprising and were greatly excited over it. Even from the official communist press, the Chinese people could find a number of important documentspublished in full. One of those published documents was the Soviet Declaration of October 30, 1956, which gave great joy to the Chinese people who sympathized with the cause of Hungarian freedom. For as we all recall, in that declaration of December 30th, the Soviet Union was telling Hungary and telling the entire world that the Soviet government had orderedits military command to withdraw the Soviet units from Budapest, and that the Soviet government was prepared to begin negotiations with the Hungarian government on the question of Soviet troops in Hungarian territory. What was most exciting to the imagination of my people living under communist tyranny was the clear and indelible impression that the powerful and ruthless communist dictatorship in Hungary, after 10 years of absolute political control and ideological remolding, was suddenly swept away by the spontaneous uprising of ill-armed students and factory workers. That regime, suddenly from itself, deserted by the people, by its own army, and by its own police force, and was restored only by the intervention of Soviet troops. Moreover, the Hungarian Revolution appeared to look beyond communism and aspire to a democratic revolution, abolishing the secret security police, discarding the one-party system, restoring a free press and a free radio, and pledging to hold free elections in the near future. It was those anti-communist and democratic manifestations that made the Hungarian uprising more exciting to my people in the mainland. Even Mordedon himself admitted in his speech of February 27, 1957, I quote, he said, certain people in our country were excited when the Hungarian event took place. They hoped that something similar would happen in China, that thousands upon thousands of people would demonstrate in the streets and oppose the people's government, unquote. Mr. President, the events in Hungary have given rise to two important anti-communist movements on the Chinese mainland during the last few months. One of these has been a nationwide outbreak of anti-communist movement among the students in the universities, colleges, and middle schools. The other movement has been one full month of outspoken criticism and attack on the Communist Party by many Chinese intellectuals in the universities and in the so-called democratic political parties. There are about 5 million boys and girls in the middle schools, colleges, and universities. These millions of Chinese youth come from all walks of life and know the real conditions of the people. The most acute suffering of the vast farming population, the universal impoverishment of the Chinese nation through the so-called socialist construction, and the large-scale enslavement of the people in all forms of economic and political regimentation. All these cannot but be most deeply felt by every sensitive young student daily witnessing the hardships of his or her own feminine life. It is absolutely untrue that the communist regime in China has won over the heart and the mind of the young. What happened in Hungary last October has proved beyond doubt that the young students and workers of Hungary have not been captivated by fully 10 years of communist rule and indoctrination. And the recent student revolt in China furnishes us the first proof that after 8 years of absolute rule and ideological molding, the students of China are almost unanimously in opposition to the communist regime. The student revolt began in Peking University on May 4th, 1957. May 4th is a date made memorable 38 years ago by the historical May 4th student movement of 1919, which was also started by the students of Peking University. On that evening of May 4th, 1957, 8,000 students gathered at a commemoration meeting, at which 19 student leaders made fiery speeches, openly attacking the communist regime for suppressing freedom and democracy in the schools and in the country. from that evening on, the world newspapers of the Peking University became the open forum of the free opinion of the students. The Peking University student leaders edited and printed a periodical entitled The Relay Cudgel of Democracy, which they mailed to all colleges and schools throughout China as a clarion call to all students to join the common fight for freedom and democracy. They also sent their representatives to contact the students in the 30-odd universities and colleges in the Peking and Tianjin area. As one of the student leaders put it, I quote, "The call is for the mobilization of an army of 1 million youth to fight communism, to oppose the so-called revolution, and to overthrow the real enemies of the people. We must fight for freedom, for democracy, and for the right of man," unquote. Mr. President, the response was unanimous from all parts, from all student bodies in every part of China, from Macton in the north to Canton in the south, from Shanghai and Nanjing in the east to Chongqing and Chengdu in the west. The response was unanimous. By the first week of June, the student movement threatened to break out into a popular uprising of the Hungarian type. On the evening of June 6, a few university professors and democratic politicians met and talked over the situation. And their general impression was that the students in Peking and Shanghai, the two most important and largest centers of student population, were on the verge of declaring a strike and going into the streets to demonstrate against the communist regime. One of the professors said, "This situation resembles the eve of the Hungarian Revolution," unquote. But the communist regime, realizing the gravity of the situation, took repressive measures in all the large centers of student population to isolate the student groups, to arrest the ringleaders, and to prevent all street demonstrations. The most serious case of student rioting took place in the industrial city of Hanyang in central China. There, nearly 1,000 students of the first middle school of Hanyang went on strike on June 12, 1957, and demonstrated in the street, shouting anti-communist slogans and hoisting anti-communist banners. The student procession marched on to the county headquarters of the Communist Party and beat up the party officers there. In the evening, the students broke into the local military conscription center, apparently with the intention of obtaining arms. The rioting was continued the next day when security police arrived in full force and opened fire on the students. A large number of arrests were made, including the vice principal of the school and a number of teachers who had led and participated in the demonstrations. News of the Hanyang student riots were not made public until nearly 2 months later. And just 10 days before the opening of the 12th session of the Assembly of the United Nations on September 7th, Reuters reported that 3 ringleaders of the student riots in Hanyang last June were executed yesterday at a mass meeting of 10,000 spectators, and that other leaders were sentenced to prison terms from 5 to 15 years. The official communist report said, this is interesting to us here, the communist report said that the instigators of the Hanyang student riots had called them the Hungarian uprising in miniature. Mr. President, the student unrest, protest, and riot formed one of the 2 great manifestations of the anti-communist feelings of my people in the mainland. The other great manifestation was the one full month of outspoken and scathing criticism of the Communist Party by Chinese intellectuals. That 1 month of freedom holiday began with May 8th and abruptly ended on June 7th, 1957. It was a month of free speech specially granted by the instruction of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party. Mr. President, to have exactly 1 month of specially granted freedom of speech throughout 8 long years of communist rule, that in itself constitutes a sufficient commentary on the barbarity of the communist regime. Now, why was that 1 month of free speech granted at all? Was it granted because otherwise these non-communist intellectuals and politicians would remain silent? No. No. Because under the communist tyranny, the people have no freedom of silence. Freedom of silence, no freedom of silence, which is often more important than the freedom of speech. In the old days, as long as a man remained silent, he would not be molested. But under the communist tyranny, there's no freedom to remain silent. You are called to the microphone to broadcast a speech prepared for you, or you are required to sign your name to an article written for you. There's no freedom of silence. And because there is no freedom of silence, the Chinese intellectuals have been compelled to speak insincerely or untruthfully, to pay compliment where compliment is undeserved, or to condemn friends or teachers whom they could not possibly have the heart to condemn. In short, the absence of the freedom of silence has forced many Chinese intellectuals to tell lies, to tell political lies, which is the only possible escape from this new tyranny, and which, by the way, is also the only effective weapon to defeat the purposes of that tyranny.